KOJB 90.1 The Eagle. Good day. Welcome to Environmental Voices. I'm Marie Rock, and joining me in the studio today is Matt Mattson. Matt, what do you do?
I'm one of the field directors for the Leech Lake Heritage Sites Program.
Okay, awesome. So tell me what exactly a person does when they're doing your position.
Well, the Leech Lake Heritage Sites Program is one of only two or three of its type in the nation. And we are an archaeological resources management contracting firm, sometimes called CRM or cultural resource management.
Okay.
And we are contracted by various agencies and individuals. We do contract work for the National Forest Service, the Minnesota National Guard, highway departments, private individuals. Of course, we take care of things here for the IHS and the band's forestry department, things like that, agencies like that, rather. And again, we are contracted. The contracting is the result of very specific federal, tribal, state, and local statutes. And there's a number of them. There's sections 106 and 110 of the National Historic Preservation Act. There's also the Leech Lake Cultural Resources Protection Ordinance of 1995, the Minnesota Field Archaeology Act of 1963, the Archaeological and Historical Preservation Act of 1974, and so on and so forth. And what these basically stipulate, and Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act would be a good example, is that any federally funded, federally permitted, or occurring on federal land, earth-disturbing activities must first have that land surface surveyed for cultural resources prior to any disruption of the land. So the whole point is to try and identify and preserve cultural resources that of any time frame, anything past 50 years.
Okay, how are they going to know if there's something going on with that particular piece of land?
We do, there's archaeological work is basically broken down in kind of general parlance into three different phases.
Okay.
Phase one is basically reconnaissance, and it boils down to, is there anything there? To conduct this, what we do is both surface reconnaissance and, where applicable, subsurface testing. The surface reconnaissance amounts to setting up grid lines. People walk in a set of transects parallel to each other across a given property, and we are looking for such things as cellar pits, the berms of old buildings, mounds, any indications, surface visible indications of human activity in the past.
Okay.
And those are then mapped, documented, and reports are filed in respect to those. The subsurface testing that is part of phase one is commonly called shovel testing.
Okay.
And what we do there is certain landforms, after we've done the surface reconnaissance, certain landforms suggest that these might be high probability habitation areas. Things like a terrace above a current lakeshore.
Okay.
That's nice and level with good access to the water and other resources. Areas like that we will shovel test, and that amounts again to digging holes that are about 14 to 16 inches in diameter and about 70 centimeters deep, call it 2.5 feet. And that soils that come from that are then run through a quarter inch mesh screen, and any artifacts that show up in that screen are labeled, bagged, preserved, the locations are documented and mapped, and then those artifacts are later analyzed and allow us to verify that there is cultural presence on that particular property. The phase two is not always called for. Generally, what we will do in the case of a phase one where we have indications of cultural activity is that we will recommend that the site area be avoided. So in the case of, say, a timber sale,
okay,
the area is flagged off and they just simply avoid it, and the cultural materials are left intact in place. In some cases, there is need to evaluate. What's called phase two is the evaluation phase. And the evaluation phase is where you go in and open up what are called formal units. You've probably seen them on TV, where you have the 1 meter square blocks,
mm-hmm,
and the very meticulous excavation going down.
Right.
And the phase two is to really determine what is there. The phase one goes, yes, we've got something. The phase two is, what is it? Mm-hmm. What does it relate to? What time frame? What cultural associations can we make? And then another big thing is it intact? Integrity is a big word.
Okay.
Because we have to be able to evaluate it against the very strict criteria of the National Historic Preservation Act. And the criteria, again, are very strict as far as whether they qualify for eligibility on the National Register. All right. So the integrity becomes very important, because if we run into an area that does have artifacts, but it's already previously been torn up by prior construction work or agricultural activity, for example, it no longer has any scientific value to it, because everything's been displaced. It's no longer in context. We can no longer properly assimilate a good data set, a good understanding of the site, because it's all been jumbled up.
Okay.
And then the phase three, that's a mitigation. And the phase three will occasionally occur. That's probably the least of the work that's done, is where you've found a site, phase one, you've evaluated it, phase two, and yes, it is intact, and yes, we can make some sort of cultural association. And so once again, after phase two, it's recommended that be avoided. We do run into cases, highway cases are a good example. We've had a couple lately in the last few years where, for example, there's a bridge that has to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And the bridge is basically essential. It's the only bridge in the area, and it's essential for people to receive emergency care, for them to, you know, travel to get groceries, for fire vehicles to get through, blah, blah, so on. And so in that case, consultations are held amongst the various agencies. The archaeologists don't make the decisions. These are all made between the various concerned agencies and parties, the Office of the State Archaeologist, tribal representatives, the TIPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, so on and so forth. And sometimes, because, say, in the case of the bridge, they can't move the bridge.
Okay.
They can't avoid it. And so the phase three is data recovery, or sometimes called mitigation, where it's very much like a phase two with the formal units and so on, except it's more extensive and even more detailed. And the idea behind the phase three is that we know this area is going to be disturbed or destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to extract as much data as possible before that data is lost forever.
Okay, where does that go once you extract it? I mean,
it depends. The actual first, what happens is that the data, which is the artifacts and so on, and the soils profiles and other factors, are all analyzed very thoroughly, and then there are extensive reports written.
Okay.
Now, the actual artifacts themselves belong to the landowner. Now, if the landowner is the federal government, it belongs to them.
Okay.
In the case of, say, work we do for the Forest Service, the National Forest Service, those artifacts are accessioned at the Forest Supervisor's Office for the Superior National Forest over in Duluth.
Okay.
If it was state land, those artifacts would be accessioned, stored with, curated, at the Minnesota Historical Society.
Okay.
On tribal land, they're accessioned and curated here under the auspices of the Tribal Historic Preservation Office.
Okay.
And in the case of a private landowner, which does occur, the artifacts technically belong to the private landowner. Although we do make efforts, there's a special set of forms that could be signed, that we do make efforts to encourage them to turn those over to the Minnesota Historical Society for a longer term and higher quality preservation.
All right. Awesome. Well, that sounds great. Okay. Well, we're going to be doing a four-part series on this. That's going to wrap up another edition of Environmental Voices for KOJB 90.1 The Eagle. I'm Marie Rock.